WPHM now presents Paul Miller's Week in Review.
Well, hey, everybody, I'm Paul Miller. I took some time off this past week. My friend Phoebe Wall Howard filled in for me, the journalist. She talked with the senior chief officer in charge of the U.S. Coast Guard station in Port Huron, David Perrin.
This is Phoebe Wall Howard in for Paul Miller, and I have a fantastic guest who has some really important news for us this morning. Senior Chief David Perrin, officer in charge of the U.S. Coast Guard station in Port Huron, Michigan. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
And I want to say, we asked permission about how you like to be addressed, and David is okay.
David is okay. After 20 years being called by a rank, I appreciate being called by my real name. Thank you.
Thank you for all you do here. David is overseeing a team of 35 folks in Port Huron and here on the Canadian border. Two big pieces of news this morning. The first one is you are handing out a very important recognition later this month for Dan Collins. He is a past Commodore of the Port Huron Yacht Club, and he ran the city's wastewater treatment plant. He's 75 and retired. He also was the harbor master as well as a science professor at SC4. But perhaps the most touching and important, of course, is his service to America in the U.S. Navy in the war zone in Vietnam. But I want you to share what you have in mind for him this month and why.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate you having us here today. It's a great honor to be able to recognize the service that Mr. Collins has done. He's definitely a force multiplier, as is all the Coast Guard Auxiliary, as they're an all-volunteer force of about 20,000 people that help augment the Coast Guard, as we are the smallest branch of the military. He has been cooking for our crews, not only here in Port Huron, but has also volunteered his time at other stations and on some of our underway cutters to ensure that our crews are fed and taken care of. He's a lot of times the first person that a lot of these people see when they come to our station. They come here from all over the country. A lot of times it's their first unit. They're scared, and he gets to be kind of almost be like that father figure to them, and he's a really special part of Port Huron and our station, and we're honored to be able to honor him by naming our galley after him.
Your galley here in Port Huron.
Yep, our galley here in Port Huron.
Now, he's been giving service, unpaid volunteer work, for almost two decades. So he served the city of Port Huron and our community for two decades, 30 years actually, 10 years after retiring from the wastewater plant. And what is his role with young people who are serving in the Coast Guard? What are you seeing and hearing? I interviewed some who said they view him as a father, and some young service members as a grandfather, actually. What do you hear?
Absolutely. So as soon as I got here this summer, I saw him, and it's always the people that are the behind the scenes. They're humble. They're there just trying to do the right thing. I saw him taking plates from some of our youngest members, telling them to get out there to do the mission. He's got it taken care of. So not only cooking, but helping clean the galley and take care of all those extra things. So as soon as I saw that, I got very interested in kind of his role here. And all I heard was great things from my crew. So it's really just a small thing to be able to recognize him for all the great deeds that he's done for all our young service members.
Again, I'm talking with Senior Chief David Perrin, officer in charge of the U.S. Coast Guard Station in Port Huron. And again, just Dan Collins' service on aircraft carriers during Vietnam. What you're seeing, and you mentioned that the U.S. Coast Guard is the smallest branch of the military. Tell us what's in store. I'm not sure people, I certainly didn't know. Tell me what's coming, what to expect.
So ever since 9/11, we have been operating under the Department of Homeland Security. Even though we're still a military branch, and we still have the same military pay scale and benefits. Since then, our missions have really exploded. So beyond just our typical search and rescue, we also do the environmental protection. We have the law enforcement mission. We also do all kinds of ice breaking, including in the Arctic. So the long-term plans is for us in the short term to expand our forces by hopefully double within the next 10 years. So it's a really exciting time as there's a big investment in the Coast Guard, and we're going to be looking to expand.
And you said right now you have a lot of involvement with members from the East Coast and West Coast, but there will be a push on Midwesterners, families who want to serve in the U.S. Coast Guard. You have service on rivers. People may not know that. And you said, why is that? Explain.
Yes. So any federal waterways, especially the Mississippi River being such a vital asset to the United States, we regulate the Mississippi River. So definitely on the river systems. In the Midwest has always been an area where we've really been kind of an untapped potential with such good talent. And that's something that we're going to be looking to recruiting in the future.
Now, you mentioned that there are more New York City firefighters than Coast Guard members today. And where are people training? You can train as an officer where you need a recommendation from a U.S. senator, or you can be enlisted. Where are those two locations?
So right now, our two accession points are through the U.S. Coast Guard Academy, and that's in New London, Connecticut, or enlisted through Cape May, New Jersey. But we're looking to open a second boot camp here within the next year.
And you think those could be in either the South or the West Coast?
Yep, that's the plan.
And approximately how many people get into the Coast Guard who apply?
So we are the most selective branch, both officer and enlisted. Just because of our pure size, we can be a little more selective.
Is it a 1 in 10?
Yep, 1 in 10 for our enlisted, and then the accession rate for the officer academy is about 20%.
And you are from Clinton, Iowa. We're so lucky to have you in Michigan. You're overseeing what part when you're based in Port Huron? What part of the state?
So Coast Guard Station Port Huron covers from Port Austin all the way down to Big Muskamoot Bay in Lake St. Clair.
And where do people go if they're interested in either applying or seeking more information on involvement with volunteering for the Coast Guard or otherwise?
Yeah, so you just go to gocoastguard.com, you put in your zip code, and it'll point you toward the closest recruiting office. But also, if you're local here, we love having people come in that are interested. We'll always open up our doors to members of the community for tours, especially juniors, seniors that may be interested in a career in the Coast Guard.
Now, you are getting ready to retire. You're 40.
Yes.
And you'll be retiring in 2027?
Yes, that is it. I understand I'm not old maybe for everybody else, but for the military, yes, I'm starting to get a little bit older. So
that's Phoebe Wall Howard talking with David Perrin, talking Coast Guard stuff. She also talked with Patty Samar about the Blue Water Woman of the Year, just after Patty had come back from a trip to the UP.
We went to Marquette for my husband's family Christmas, right after Christmas, and we came back a day early due to the blizzard that was predicted and did indeed hit Marquette yesterday, and they had quite a wallop of snow.
So I saw when you arrived, there was no snow.
Well, they had some snow when we arrived, but not very much compared to what they typically have in December. And then, within 24 hours, the pictures I saw last night, they had, 3 feet on the ground. It's crazy.
Your family's safe?
Oh, yeah. They're all hunkered down. Everybody's good.
Okay, good. This morning, I wanted to talk about something. A deadline is rapidly approaching, January 9th, that you are hoping to get some nominations. You've got some in the pocket. But we're talking about the Blue Water Woman of the Year, different categories. And these nominations come from all throughout our community. But let me tell you why I wanted you to talk about this, because I went to one of your programs. This year will be March 11, but it moved me to tears. I knew none of these women. I had no stake in the game. And listening to the stories of the women you selected made me so proud.
Oh, I'm proud of all of them as well. Yes, the Blue Water Woman of the Year Awards will take place on March 11th, 2026. So save the date, put that on your calendar. And I'm glad you said that you didn't know any of the women, because I love it. I love to hear when people come just because they want to see women honored, and it's not because they feel like they have to, quote unquote, because they know one of the award recipients. And I know a number of women do come every year just because, or not just women, I know men who come too, just because they want to support the program, which I'm forever indebted to their support. And I think it's important that we are honoring women in our community, because they do some pretty amazing things.
Well, and I learned so much about how much I didn't know behind the scenes.
Sure.
And again, we're talking with Patty Samar, who's the editor and publisher of Blue Water Woman magazine, and nominations are coming in. And I wonder if you can give an idea of the kinds of awards, perhaps one or two examples of women who stand out in your memory that have been honored.
Yeah, I mean, what I like to tell people is never hesitate to nominate someone who you think is deserving of community recognition. The women who receive awards come from all walks of life. And a lot of women who are nominated, maybe they have reached some career goal, like they're the CEO of their organization. Or they're actually, funny thing is, a lot of them are on the cusp of becoming the CEO. There's a long history of women who've received an award and then within a year or two have received a significant promotion. I think of Carrie Hepting, for example. She was nominated by the last county administrator in St. Clair County, who was Bill Kaufman, who was her boss. And then within a couple of years, he retired and she became the county administrator. But other women who have received the awards aren't achieving that kind of career height. For example, Heather Bearden is a community activist, I would call her. She works for the Food Bank of Eastern Michigan. She is a phenomenal young woman, and her story is really compelling because Heather did not have an easy life in her young life, and in fact, at one point found herself homeless, and she knows what it's like to be hungry. That's why she works for a nonprofit, for a food bank. She has been there. She feels for those people she serves every day, and her story is just phenomenal and compelling, and she has a very successful and very happy life now, and she and her husband have kids and grandkids, and life's all good. But she's had a lot of early struggles, and her story is just one that I am so proud to have been able to tell. Another one that stands out in my mind is Mara McCallman, who I think a lot of people in the community know who she is, but her family suffered unspeakable tragedy when her another family member, in fact, I would just say murdered her husband and attempted to murder Mara. And Mara took that horrific event in her life and turned it into goodness by starting a nonprofit in our community that helps people going through the court system, helps victims of crime, like she and her family found themselves through no fault of their own. I think that is probably the one and only time I don't think either one of myself nor the person I was interviewing we were crying the entire interview. It was a very emotional interview, and I interviewed her like years after that event, you know, took place. But
in the name of her
receiving an award.
No, the name of her nonprofit.
Oh, her nonprofit is P.S. I Love You. P.S. stands for Paul Skinner, who was her husband. And she has a new husband, she has a second husband who is a phenomenal guy, Kyle McCallman, and he's been very, very supportive of her and Paul. And he always says, if I knew Paul, I would really like him. So,
P.S., you're my hero. So when you hear people talk about that, they do runs.
Oh, yes,
and all
P.S., you're my hero. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
not. I love
your
P.S.
fundraisers. Well, P.S., I love you is kind of probably the same thing.
Yep.
Phoebe Wall-Howard talking with Patty Samar earlier this week on the WPHM Morning Show. Phoebe also talked with Sam Clement about the North American International Auto Show.
I know that you're gearing up for the show at Huntington Place, and I just wanted to walk through so you could give some like a sneak peek to our listeners, January 13, 16, and 17 through the 25th. How do you want to attack this? I know you've got a race car component. You've got luxury foreign cars. Should we just go in order?
Yeah, sure. We'll start with the gallery. We're actually kicking off the show on January 13th with a special fundraiser in support of Forgotten Harvest. We're really excited about this partnership. Obviously, philanthropy is a huge part of what we do at the auto show, and this is a new element that we've added this year. We know that food insecurity is a big issue in this region, and we saw this as an opportunity to support that. And so having a special night where anyone can buy tickets for it, and the money will support Forgotten Harvest, and it's a chance to really get a sneak peek at the show and be around some of the most luxurious cars in the world for a really special night on January 13th.
Okay, on that night, just give an idea of
really last year took my breath away. The kinds of vehicles that people will see up close and walk around with, you know, a nice beverage, meet really interesting people. What will they actually, can you give an idea or two of the kinds of vehicles?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these are, you think, your Maseratis, your Lamborghinis, your Ferraris. We've added a couple new ones this year, like Pagani and Koenigsegg. And so these really are some of the most rare vehicles that you'll see in the world. It's not every day that you get to see these up close and personal, and to be able to come down and take pictures with them and to engage with some of the people that have these vehicles. It really is special. And so you think about the Motor City, you think about, you know, kind of our passion for cars, and to have some of these foreign cars as a part of the mix, it really is a special night.
Well, one thing you've done taking over, there's always been a great team running the Detroit Auto Show, but what Sam Clement has done is sort of bring a different perspective, also spotlighting foreign and luxury vehicles. And that gallery event has been incredible. So that's January 13, downtown. Then January 16, Charity Preview. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so that's our signature event that we have every year. You know, has been referred to commonly as Auto Prom, and it's where, you know, the who's who of Metro Detroit come and gather in support of the six children's charities that we support every year. And we're really proud of this. We've raised $125 million plus over the last 30 years because of this event. Anticipate another big year of fundraising. And it really is a special night. Not only do people get dressed up and the fashion is front and center, but, you know, the children's charities, we really put a spotlight on them, and I think we'll do so in an even more special way this year. So, again, a great chance to see that. Those cars you referenced, you know, earlier on the 13th, those will be at the show throughout. So, you know, if you can't see them on the 13th, you'll see them on the 16th at Charity Preview. And then when we open to the public on the 17th to the 25th, they'll be there as well. So it really is a great couple of weeks here in Metro Detroit, celebrating the auto industry, celebrating, you know, the people who work in the city and support these charitable organizations and the young people who are inspired to get into the industry. It really is a full moment.
So in the Charity Preview Gala, as I understand, Robin Thicke will be performing that night.
That is correct, yes.
And then we've got people. One thing I love about that event when I cover it is you have tuxes and long gowns, but really you have every kind of fashion, things you'd find in New York City, things you'd find down in Miami, just really different looks. Every age is there. So that's pretty cool. And then also the public days we've got from the 17th to the 25th. How are things a little bit different this year? I know you have a racing component. What are some things folks can look forward to?
Well, I think, you know, compared to the last couple of years, we have more brands on the floor. So I think that's exciting. I think, you know, first and foremost, people want to come down and see the vehicles, and they'll see more of them this year. And we're really proud of that. There's been, an evolution of our show. I think there's no doubt about that. And I think we found a real sweet spot coming back to January this past year and then really building on that momentum leading up to 2026. So you'll see more brands on the floor. I think you also have more experiences and a more engaged experience when you come down, whether it's, you know, we have a lot more digital, a lot more components, a lot more content that'll be shown for people to engage with the industry. You know, one of the pieces I'm particularly excited about is we have a new experience called our Visit Detroit Interactive Experience. And this is in the spirit of getting young people engaged in the industry. You know, we know that there is a need for technicians, designers, engineers in the industry. And we see this as an opportunity to engage with a new generation, to get them involved into the auto industry. And so in this experience, you know, we'll have our Michigan Science Center, and they'll have all kinds of STEM activities. We'll have some kids' ride-in drives, so you think like your Power Wheels tracks. We'll have, you know, high-end racing simulators that anyone can get in and engage with. A group called Code 313 is bringing some AR and so augmented reality and virtual reality headsets, which will allow people to, pretend to change a tire or change, check oil levels and tire pressures and do all these kind of things so that when they do this in real life, they're not as intimidated because they've seen this in a virtual setting. So really engaging the younger generation in those immersive experiences. And of course, we have our ride and drive tracks as well. So, you know, you'll be able to get into these vehicles that are on the market now. Last year, we gave 100,000 rides. I anticipate that'll be even more this year. And it's all kinds of powertrains, right? It's our internal combustion engine, it's hybrid, it's EV, it's whatever you're interested in. We'll have those types of vehicles on our four tracks. And so it's a really good way to see what's out there, to see what might be of interest to you, and just to see the evolution of the auto industry.
This is Sam Clement, Executive Director of the Detroit Auto Show. Sam, where might people go to online, would you recommend, to find out the dates, buy tickets, and explore for a little more information?
It doesn't get any easier than DetroitAutoShow.com. So DetroitAutoShow.com, you can get your tickets there for any of our events. Literally, you can come to any of the events that you want. If you're interested in the gallery or charity preview, those tickets are available now. If you're ready to bring the family down for the public show, those tickets are available right now at DetroitAutoShow.com. And then at the site, you've got all the information about our activations, our special days. You know, you referenced we have Racing Day in partnership with the Grand Prix. That'll be on Tuesday, January 20th. We've got a great lineup of racers that are coming, and they'll, you know, walk the floor, and they'll meet with fans. And so, we're really leaning into all things automotive.
Guest host on the WPHM Morning Show, Phoebe Wall-Howard, talking with Sam Clement from the North American International Auto Show. Port Huron has a new museum director. Phoebe Wall-Howard, filling in for me, Paul Miller, talked with Gina Schreck on the Morning Show.
Well, so here it is early this morning, and you, you're staying at the Holiday Inn Express because you're coming to us from Flushing, Michigan.
Yes, Flushing, Michigan. That's correct.
And yeah. You're house hunting.
And I am house hunting. I am on the lookout, and I have a wonderful realtor that's helping me out. And so it's just a matter of time. But this summer... the summer it'll happen.
Now, I understand not only did we get you here at Port Huron Museums, but you beat out more than 90 other applicants for this position.
I know. I can't believe it. What an honor. Such an honor. And I'm so happy to be able to be in Port Huron. But, you know, I knew this was the job for me because when I first got there, I saw something that said Regina on it. It looked like an old bell or something. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was in one of the objects, and it said Regina right on it. So I thought this is my place.
Now, you've worked at the Detroit Institute of Arts?
Yes,
and also the Flint Institute of Arts.
Correct.
So vast different experiences. You have degrees, you said, in art history from bachelor's and master's from where?
Michigan State University.
And how does that inform what you have ahead?
Oh, so much, so much. And also, I want to note that I want to give a shout out to the Midland Center for the Arts, too, because that was the very last place I worked prior.
So. Thank you.
And yeah, so I'm very excited because I really believe that, you know, coming from university life and seeing how arts affect campus life. I really would love to bring more community to, especially, throughout all the museums, actually. But I'd love to see the Carnegie grow in particular. And because, we have the college just down the street, the community college. And I would love to be able to see how we can bring more students there, more people from the downtown area. And I think it's about community and making a space for people that they feel welcome and, to be able to come and sit and study or just enjoy, you know, the furnishings around and be able to look at history and artwork and to be able to really reflect rather than just have it be a passive experience.
I was surprised and delighted by a new installation you have that children and adults can go in and as if they're driving a ship.
Oh, yes. The pilot house. Yes.
That is the coolest new exhibit. Yes. And you and I've seen families compete.
Yes. Yes.
On who is the better ship.
Yes.
Yeah. Tell us about what you're seeing.
Well, I think that was great. Actually, that was the brainchild of the last director, Veronica Campbell. And she worked with staff to make that happen, and probably various community partners, I'm sure, and to make that come alive, basically. And I think that you're always, you know, when you get a chance to be interactive and immersive in an exhibit, you're going to feel more connected.
Phoebe Wall Howard talking with the new museum director in Port Huron, Gina Schreck. I'm Paul Miller. Be sure and tune in for the morning show Monday through Friday, 6 till 10 on WPHM.